I'm Farai Chidea, and this is News and Notes. On our Bloggers Roundtable today, another first for black politicians, plus an L.A. mortgage company tells pop star Michael Jackson to hand over his house keys and beat it. Joining me now on the roundtable is political commentator Jasmine Canik of jasminecanik.com, Eric Brown, who blogs for the Detroit News' political and government blog, and John McCann, who runs the blog Book of John. Hey, folks.
What's going on?
How are you doing?
I am doing great. So let's talk about Karen Bass, a L.A. native elected last Thursday to head California State Assembly. She is the first black woman to ever take the speaker position, and here she is accepting her new title.
It is a coincidence that this vote coincided with the planned celebration of African American History Month, but it is a wonderful coincidence because I have always been aware that I am here today because I stand on the shoulders of those who came before, those leaders and trailblazers that we will pay tribute to today. We are all bracing ourselves for the crisis that we face in our state, and I look forward to spending my time as your next speaker. It's going to take me a while.
Now, California generates 17% of the nation's economic revenue. So if California were a separate country, it would be in the top 10 of the world's biggest economic superpowers. Helping to run the state is no small task. And Jasmine, you know Bass personally. You mentioned her rise to speaker in your blog. Tell us a little bit about who she is.
Well, I'm very excited for her and for California because she is a great person. She's a great leader. When I worked in the California Assembly for the Honorable Mervyn Dimley, she was vice chair of the Legislative Black Caucus. She was and continues to be one of those people that is able to bring people together in terms of legislative issues. She was very focused. She was very tenacious. And she got in there, and she actually did what politicians should do. She got in there, and, you know, I remember one of the first things about her was she was putting out legislation back to back to back to back.
Jasmine, you know what? We're having a little trouble with your phone line. We are going to come back and talk to you more about this. So, you know, just hang in there. Eric, I'm going to bring you into this conversation. We're going to talk a little bit about Detroit in a bit. But this is this one of these situations where there are so many firsts, and in a way, Bass is following in the footsteps of Willie Brown, who was California's first black assembly speaker, period. He served at that post for 14 years, went on to become San Francisco's mayor in 95. California is not necessarily a state with the largest percentage of African Americans, but there's such a strong history of black leadership here. Why do you think that is?
Well, for one, I think that when you have an agenda that people can relate to, people tend to want to be a part of what you're trying to do. And a testament to her is the fact that she was just elected in 2004, and already she's the, or will become, the House Speaker, and that says a lot about her. Maybe her age had a lot to do with it. She is a very seasoned individual with regard to a working background, and that helped her to probably get a lot of people to coalesce with her agenda and to feel that she would be the mature type of person to get her to where she is now.
John, when you think about these state issues, I mean, states are, they can be their own superpowers, like California. It's such an enormous economic engine. And a lot of people don't really know what goes on the assembly level, but it's obviously critically important. Is this really the kind of job where, although it may not be as flashy as a Barack Obama running for president, people should look up and say, well, okay, this is a benchmark of progress on sharing political power in America? Is this something we should be plugged into?
Well, certainly it's big because California is so huge. And I definitely appreciate the comparison between, you know, Barack Obama, what he's doing on the national stage, and what Ms. Bass is undertaking, you know, there in California. Because, yeah, California is gigantic. But, you know, for my money, you know, enough with the first. You know, look at the love that Barack Obama is getting. And, you know, it's not so much about Mrs. Bass's color. I mean, we rattled off quite a few accomplishments. Jasmine was rattling off quite a few accomplishments that Ms. Bass has achieved. And so it's more about simply what she brings to the table, no matter what color she is, because we can go on and on and on about the first black person to do this, that, and the other. But I think we're getting beyond that now.
Jasmine, do you think it's a situation where we're kind of done with the firsts, or should we be done with the first? And then aside from that, what do you think the biggest challenges are going to be for someone in her position, specifically the position of speaker?
Well, the biggest challenges, I'll start with that one, is obviously just looking at California's deficit. I mean, right now we are sending pink slips to teachers. We are in a financial crisis, so she does inherit that. You know, but I don't think we're done with looking at first. I mean, there are still a lot of things that African Americans have yet to obtain. I mean, she obviously is the first African American woman, but we still have a lot more to do, especially in the political arena. And I just find it very inspiring that, you know, given all the diversity of California, and, you know, we don't have in the legislature, in the 80-member assembly, we do not have very many African Americans up there. So she had to be able to work with and garner the support of whites, Latinos, and Asians to be able to be voted as speaker. And I think that speaks a lot about who she is as a person in terms of being able to bring people together. And I think she'll be able to do that for California.
Eric, let me move on to something that is near and dear to your heart, no doubt. The Detroit mayor, Kwame Kilpatrick, can't seem to shake his latest trouble. Over the past few months, he's been involved in a public scandal around intimate text messages that he exchanged with a woman who is not his wife. And it's boiled over into a police cover-up allegation, and a city council panel is moving to oust the mayor. You've been watching this story really closely. Catch us up to speed on what the recall movement and the city council approach is regarding the mayor right now.
Well, the city council's approach right now is to have a resolution passed. They will be voting on a resolution tomorrow. There are 9 members on the Detroit City Council. There needs to be at least 5 for the resolution to go forward. And what they are trying to do is trying to get the governor of the state to relieve him of his duties, because they don't have the power to do that unless he is convicted of a crime and found to be guilty of that crime. And it is having an effect on the city already, because you have the National Council of Black Mayors. They have pulled out of Detroit for their convention next month.
That's a very profound statement. Do you think
Yes.
that it's just essentially repudiating the city until the city is a symbol for good governance?
Oh, definitely, because the leader of that group, he gave the reason for them pulling out of the convention here in Detroit, which was supposed to take place, I think, the middle of April. He specifically said because of the troubles the mayor is having, that's why they decided to go elsewhere, and they would be going to New Orleans, Louisiana. And that's a testament to the lack of effectiveness the current mayor has in Detroit right now. You have people taking money out of the city that the city so dearly needs, that's a sign that it's time for him to go. Originally, I was not for him resigning. My thing was let everything play out. But when it starts to affect the city, a city that is in dire straits of the need to have money come into the city and be spent in the city, have people invest in the city, that's a problem. And I don't have faith in the electorate in Detroit to not do the right thing in 2009.
Well, you know, Mr. Brown, I think it says a lot about, you know, the folks who are in power, that once they get there and something like this happens, you know, they want power so much that they'll just cling and hang on until the very end, when, as you pointed out, man, this thing is affecting the city.
Correct.
You know, if the laws aren't in place, then the laws need to be changed, that, you know, to get this kind of stuff out of there. I mean, the sex stuff is bad enough as it is. And, you know, even as bad as that is, I would even argue that, hey, maybe that's not the reason for him to step down. But when it's just so much corruption and cover-up going on, I mean, that's just not good. And, yeah,
right.
the sex stuff is bad, point blank.
And the story that was done on Nightline last week, I mean, that really put everything into perspective with people around the country, because a lot of people may not have been aware of this, but a lot of people did watch Nightline last Wednesday or Thursday. And the comments that are on the Nightline website right now, I mean, if you are from Detroit, you should be ashamed to say or tell anyone you're from Detroit.
And see, the thing is, you know, we talk about, you know, the first black person to do this, first black, and Kwame is not, but it just shows you that, hey, you know, let's not put too much stock in the first black or having a black person in a certain position when you're not going to hold up and represent like you need to.
Jasmine, let me throw you into this mix. That's something that comes up again and again. It's like, are you down with the brown just because of loyalty, or do you need to hold people to as high or even a higher standard? I mean, black elected officials are always going to be scrutinized closely from outside and inside the community. In a case like this, what's the responsibility of the voters?
The responsibility of the voters is to obviously do what they need to do to move the city forward. And it sounds like the mayor needs to go. It sounds like he stopped serving the public interest, is now serving his own personal interests. We always have to hold our elected and public officials accountable. I think you're seeing a nationwide movement of that with CBC members who are trying to support Clinton, even though their districts have said, hold up, no, we want Obama. And they're being, you know, called out for that, and rightfully so, because the districts, their constituents who they were elected to represent, you know, is the voice that they should be listening to. And the same goes here. While I don't know too much about what's going on in Detroit, it sounds like I said, he's serving his own personal interests. And we've had a situation or two like that here. Compton and Linwood come to mind, you know, where we've had sort of the same situation going on.
Well,
I'll find a point for Ari.
Please go ahead.
The thing is, it's not about the text messages. It's not about the sex and cheating on his wife. For me, it's about the fact that he tried to have a secret deal to prevent this information from becoming public. That's what I have a problem with.
Which is no different from our federal government, right? And when we found out that our federal government was doing that with certain things as it related to the war and other things, you know, all hell broke loose. And we demanded that certain files be, you know, open so we could find out what's going on. So, again, it sounds like this man really needs to go.
Correct.
But you know, look what we have here, the infidelity, the text messages and all that kind of stuff. You know, the secret deal is one thing, but then you marry that with, you know, the infidelity.
Well, Clinton, we had President Clinton. I don't think that's a reason to oust an elected official. But when you talk about cover-ups in the millions and millions of dollars and things of that sort, I think that's when it's time to reanalyze and figure out whether a person.
No. Point taken. But my thing is, you know, if you put those two together, you see clearly the type of person that you're dealing with, the type of person who will try to make a sweet deal, a backroom kind of deal. Is the kind of person who was doing these other things on the side.
All right, guys, I want to move us.
$9 million that they did not have.
I want to move us on to one last topic, but first of all, in case anyone's tuning in, this is NPR's News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. We're talking with Jasmine Kanick of jasminekanick.com, Eric Brown of the Detroit News' political and government blog, and John McCann, who runs the blog Book of John. We were just talking about Detroit, and it sounds like there's plenty there, but I want to just take a quick journey to Neverland. Neverland Ranch, Michael Jackson. He has missed payments on a $24.5 million loan for his amusement park / ranch / boudoir. And the one question that comes to mind for me is, should his family, given that he has exhibited some unusual behavior, should his family have stepped in? Would anything have been different? Did they try? Jasmine, what's your sense of that?
I really don't know. I mean, are you talking about like a Britney situation where
kinda.
Her father had to step in? I mean, the man is a grown man. You know, when I first, you know, heard the story, I thought to myself, well, okay, there are tens of thousands of other Americans out there who are missing payments on their home loans, too. That, you know, we're in a crisis right now in America. And I guess, you know, maybe, you know, he's not above that crisis either. But at the end of the day, it was probably poor financial, you know, management. If I had as much money as Michael had, I would not even be in this situation. But then on the second hand, I wouldn't even own a piece of property that big, not one that I don't visit either.
Well, John, the question becomes, I mean, many people have looked at the trials that he went through, regarding possible inappropriate behavior with children, all of the different issues that he's had over time. And you can't control another adult all the time, but there are checks and balances that often go around the lives of entertainers, you know, managers and other people who are trying to steer their ships. Is this a case where he just did what he was going to do, or do you think other people maybe even benefited from what sounds like poor decision making?
Well, first of all, cue up some sappy violin music for me now. I don't know about all.
You're not sobbing for Michael.
No. Actually, I am. I'm disgusted. Hint. At Miss Jasmine, because listen, You know, this is just flat out wrong.
You disgusted at me?
Yeah, because listen, this is Michael Jackson we're talking about here. Look at all this man has
done. You better
done
beat it.
For America. He gave us the moonwalk. He had us drinking Pepsi and wearing Jerry curls. The American people need to step up and respond and bail out.
Government need to bail him out too?
We need to bail him out.
Okay. Yeah.
You
are alone on that one.
On, John, I think you plan on performing on Def Jam next week.
You better beat it.
I'm hating on Michael Jackson, man.
I'm not hating on him. I think I agree with Jasmine. He's a grown man. I have brothers and a sister. If I'm not aware of their financial situation or if they don't let me into that situation, it's hard for me to get in a position to help him out because he seems to have more people that do not look like him around him more so than his own family.
Uh-oh.
So, bam, you know, there you have it.
Except when he got into legal trouble, then he had
that's
the
when he wanted to
fruit
come home
Islam.
And he wanted to be, you know, he wanted to be Michael Leroy Jackson. But bottom line
exactly,
is, you know,
exactly.
you deal with your people the way you want to deal with your people, and I don't have any sympathy for him.
Not
when you have that much money.
I agree. When you have that much money, this is just absolutely ridiculous for him to be in this sort of situation. And maybe they'll teach him a lesson, maybe it won't. Regardless of the fact, you know, he will still be Michael Jackson. I'm sure he will still put out albums. But, I mean, I guess it just goes to show you that even with all the money in the world, you can still have problems. I mean, look at Britney, look at Michael, look at all of these celebrities who are sort of in this sort of financial trouble.
All right, on that,
same situation.
We're going to have to end it there. More money, more problems. Thanks, guys. We've been talking to Jasmine Canick, political commentator who blogs at jasminecanick.com, Eric Brown, who blogs for the Detroit News' political and government blog, and John McCann, who runs the blog Book of John. And that is our show for today. Thank you for sharing your time with us. To listen to the show or subscribe to our podcast, visit our website, nprnewsandnotes.org.